Dr. William Luther Pierce. The year 2000. Storm break loose.
Hello. Let's talk more today about a question that listeners have raised repeatedly. What can I do for my people? What can I do to fight my people's enemies? If you've been listening to these American Distant Voices programs for a while, you know that more than anything else, I have urged people to stop being spectators and become participants in the historical process. If you don't like what's being done to our society, to our world, then get off the sidelines and get out on the field. Don't just sit there and complain quietly to your friends. Do something. The fact that not as many people as I would like have responded to this urging is not entirely due to cowardice or laziness. Most Americans are very much constrained by their need to earn a living. Relatively few have complete freedom of action. If they are to join the fight, they need specific and practical suggestions as to what they can do and still earn a living. So today I want to make one or two such suggestions. First, I want to warn everyone as strongly as possible. Whatever you do, be certain that it is legal. There is very little in the way of illegal activity that is likely to be productive at this time anyway. Believe me, I understand the frustration, especially in our young men, when we see what's happening around us and feel an almost irresistible urge to strike back. But for now, let's stay away from the bombs and machine guns. There's much else which must be done before we can use those weapons effectively. We don't need those things quite yet. Conditions are not such that we can use them effectively, so let's just forget about them for the time being. If you want to collect weapons or practice with weapons, keep your weapons legal. There are plenty of legal things that can be done now that are effective, and very few illegal things. And when we make a decision about what to do, it should be based on considerations of effectiveness, not on how big a splash it'll make on the evening news. As I said a moment ago, the biggest constraint on most of our people is their need to earn a living. Anyone who is employed by a company which is determined to stay on the good side of the government and the media is in an especially delicate position. Even those of our people who are in business for themselves often are dependent on good relations with the public and can be driven into bankruptcy if attacked by the media. The first thing for every person to do is to make a realistic evaluation of his situation. If you're a policeman or an employee of a big insurance company, then there may be a concerted effort to have you fired if you say or do anything politically incorrect. You may get the John Rocker treatment by the media. Of course, you may have the law on your side. You may be able to sue your employer if he tries to fire you. The way the judicial system works in this country, however, that may be a frustrating and disappointing endeavor. It is set up to favor the litigant who has the most money to spend on lawyers, not the litigant who's in the right. You may want to go ahead and sue anyway, but most people would prefer not to be obliged to take that course. So the thing to do is either arrange to have an income that can't be threatened by the self-appointed guardians of political correctness, in which case you can do whatever you want to do, or you can remain under the thumb of the system and act with circumspection. But regardless of which choice you make, the important thing is to act. I've been looking for ways to facilitate the first choice, giving people who want to be activists an opportunity to do so by making it possible for them to support themselves independently of the system. Here's a specific example. I recently bought a couple of record companies which specialize in what is known as resistance music. That's music which has a pro-white or pro-European American message, or an anti-system message. It's been essentially underground music for a long time, composed and performed and distributed by amateurs on a part-time basis. The Jewish media bosses would like to keep it that way, but my aim is to professionalize it and mainstream it. I want to distribute enough of it so that the people who compose it and perform it can become professionals, can actually make a living at it. I believe that there's a huge, untapped market for resistance music. Most Americans have never heard any resistance music. They've heard it denounced as hate music by the Jewish media, but they've not actually heard it performed. I believe that many white Americans will like it when they hear it. If you'd like to hear some of it yourself, go to my website at resistance.com. Anyway, if I'm successful in mainstreaming resistance music, it has the potential for becoming a substantial industry employing at least a few thousand people. And that's just one example of what I have in mind. As discontent with the government in America grows, as discontent with uncontrolled immigration and other government policies grows, as discontent with the bias and lies of the controlled media grows, there will be many other opportunities for new industries which are independent of the system. And if these new industries have a policy of employing people who are willing to be activists in the cause of freeing America and preserving the future of white Americans, they can open up possibilities for many other people. And I hardly need to tell you, I'm not the only one who can do this sort of thing. In fact, I've never thought of myself as a businessman or an entrepreneur. If I can do it, anybody can do it. A lot of you ought to be thinking along these lines. If you believe that you were cut out to be an entrepreneur, then be an entrepreneur for a worthwhile cause and help free others to do what they ought to do. That's one side of the coin. The other side, and at this time it's the more important side, is what you can do with circumspection right where you are. And let me tell you, there's no one, and I mean no one, who can't take some effective action on behalf of our people, no matter how sensitive his position. I don't care whether you work inside the White House with a top-secret security clearance, or you're on the staff of the rottenest politician in the Congress, or even if you're the token Gentile in some Jewish law firm. If you're really concerned about your people, about your race, you can take effective action without your family ending up starving on the street. All you really need, in addition to average intelligence and an average amount of initiative, is to have your priorities right, to understand that there is nothing more important than the future of our people, nothing, and to feel a sense of personal responsibility for what is happening to our world, to our civilization, to our race. Now, a few specific suggestions. I believe that the most important thing for responsible people to do is to speak out, to stop being silent. Many of our people are afraid that if they let it be known what they're thinking, their lives will be ruined. In most cases, that isn't true. What each of us must do is evaluate his own situation realistically, to think about only the real dangers and not the imaginary dangers, and then speak out just as strongly as he can in his circumstances. In order to survive, it is not necessary in most cases to persuade everyone around us that we are politically correct. We can say things which are not politically correct and still survive. We always should use good judgment, of course, and consider the effect of our words on others. But when we believe that we are right, we must not let ourselves be intimidated into silence. It is our responsibility to push the envelope, to take a chance on saying too much rather than saying too little. And taking a chance does not mean talking just to your personal friends who already agree with you. It does not mean raging anonymously in some internet discussion group. It means standing up and saying to the public, "This is my name. This is what I believe." I'll read you a letter that was published just a few days ago in the Russellville, Arkansas Courier, the local newspaper there. The writer of the letter, Billy Roper, is a personal friend of mine and a member of my organization, the National Alliance. He also is a high school history teacher in Russellville. He wrote his letter in response to an editorial by the typically liberal editor of the newspaper. The liberal editor had criticized Atlanta Braves pitcher John Rocker for expressing his distaste for the diversity of New York City. In response, Billy Roper wrote, and I quote, "In his editorial of March 4th, the editor writes that John Rocker should read Jewess Emma Lazarus' paean to the colonization of America by the Third World. Send me your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse yearning for their first welfare check. In reality, the United States was founded by white men for the express purpose of securing the blessings of liberty for themselves and their offspring, not the offspring of Africa or Asia or Mexico. What Mr. Rocker failed to realize, but the editor clearly illustrates, is that whites are not allowed to criticize the new multicultural wonderland of diversity so long as Miss Lazarus' tribe dominates the mass media and government of this country. Instead, whites are ordered to be tolerant of the fact that, as President Clinton bragged in his recent State of the Union address, we will be a minority in this country within a generation. The country is being turned over to those who never could have created it. Isn't America, which is more like Mexico or Ethiopia, a better America? Isn't America, where those who created this country have become a minority, a worthy destiny? Is John Rocker the only American who is upset by the fact that the United States is becoming just another third world cesspool? Not by a long shot. We have enough tired and enough poor and enough wretched refuse already. It's time to tear down Emma Lazarus' sign and put up a fence instead." Well, that was my friend Billy Roper's letter, which was printed in the Russellville Courier last month. He could have said a lot more, of course. He could have expressed himself much more strongly. But in view of the very general, mainstream, brainwashed nature of his audience, he chose his words pretty well. Well enough, anyway, to provide encouragement to many other white men and women who believe as we do, but who have been too timid to speak out. The editor of the Russellville Courier hated him for it, of course, and responded to Billy's letter with a snide remark. All of the other liberals who read the Courier also hated him for expressing himself as he did. These days, a man cannot act honorably and responsibly without being hated for it. Any man who is not hated is a shirker. He is not doing what he should be doing. Anyway, the important thing is that my friend Billy Roper expressed himself. He spoke out. And he's still a high school history teacher, still earning a living. the people who would like to see Billy unemployed, who would like to see him fired from his teaching position, are themselves afraid of exposing their beliefs to the public. What they believe is that anyone who is politically incorrect should be cast into the outer darkness, should be shunned, should starve. They are intolerant, narrow-minded, bigoted, vicious, hateful people. And they are cowards. They attack only in gangs. They expose themselves only when they are sure that they will have overwhelming support. And they understand that many ordinary citizens in Arkansas don't believe that a history teacher should be fired for writing a letter to a newspaper saying the things Billy said in his letter. And they know that Billy is a fighter, that he won't go quietly, and so they leave him alone. What Billy Roper did is what thousands of other high school teachers also can do and should do. It's what thousands of attorneys and businessmen and factory workers and clerical workers and engineers can and should be doing. And they can do this without destroying their lives or their careers or their families if they use reasonably good judgment. And you know, when you speak out, it doesn't have to be in the form of a letter to your newspaper. There are thousands of ways of speaking out. The next time you go to a PTA meeting, don't just sit there with your mouth shut because you're sure that no one else will agree with you. Speak out, and speak out strongly on the school policies you disagree with, or make suggestions for new policies you believe the school needs. And sure, some politically correct lemming will disagree with you and will criticize you for not being politically correct yourself. They are bold because they have become accustomed to speaking out without opposition. Put up a little real opposition, and they will run for cover. And don't be afraid to use your head and plan your opposition like a military tactician. Get together with four or five other people who share your views and have them go to the meeting with you. Plan what each of you will say. Provide the liberals with some organized and determined opposition. It'll be a new experience for them. If you're a little shy about speaking in public, just get a small group of people together and have them listen to one of these American Distant Voices broadcasts in your living room. That's a very effective way of helping to spread the word. There are millions of our people in America who agree with us or who are ready to agree if we help them organize their thoughts. They share our feelings. They share our disgust and our horror at what is being done to our world. But they just haven't thought it all out and reached any conclusions about what they should do. They haven't put it all together yet. Their biggest obstacle is that they believe they're all alone. They've been so intimidated and beaten down by the controlled media that they are sure no one else shares their feelings. So they try to suppress their feelings and just blend in. They need to be told that they're not alone. There's a storm getting ready to break loose in America. America's internal enemies have managed to keep the lid on this storm for a long time. They have managed to keep the millions of people who don't agree with them or who are agreeing with them now only because they are confused and misled. They have managed to keep these millions of white Americans silent and disorganized and demoralized only because they control the mass media. They have managed to maintain an illusion of unanimous agreement with their policies through their media control. But the illusion is wearing thin. The Jews are flooding America with non-white immigrants from Mexico and the Caribbean and Asia and trying to maintain the illusion that most white Americans agree with this policy, that it would be un-Christian or racist to disagree. Actually, They're doing a pretty good job of maintaining that illusion. They are succeeding in keeping most white Americans quiet about the immigration disaster, afraid to complain about it. They use their control of television effectively. But that doesn't mean that most white Americans are happy about the destruction of their country just because they're staying quiet. And it's not just the flood of immigrants which has white Americans seething quietly. The Jews and their allies have been bragging about how their media propaganda has gotten more Americans to accept racial intermarriage, and how the rate of miscegenation has climbed dramatically as a result. That's true enough. But for every couch potato who has let himself be persuaded that it's all right for his grandchildren to be mulattoes, there is a white American who is angry enough to do some serious killing of the people putting out that poisonous propaganda. And that's not all by any means. The storm is brewing. The pressure is building. The Jews and the politicians may believe that they can keep the lid on. They may believe that by getting laws in the United States like they already have in Canada and Britain and many other countries, making it illegal to write or say anything which is politically incorrect, that is, anything which they can label as hate speech, they can delay the storm until it is too late for us to save ourselves. They may be right, but I don't think so. I think that storm will come soon enough to allow our people to redeem themselves. I also think that when it comes, it will be violent enough to blow every last member of their tribe to hell, and also everyone who has collaborated with them. At least, I hope so. But you know, we mustn't base our future on hope alone. We must act as well. We must do whatever we can to keep the pressure building. That's why it's important for all of us to speak out. We don't want just a blind, undirected storm. We want a purposeful storm. We must help our people understand what is being done to them, and who is doing it and why. And we must give them a target for their rage. Above all, we must give them courage and hope now. Hope that it is possible, after all, for our people to survive, and the courage to do whatever is necessary to make that possibility become reality. And it's not really so difficult for us to do that. All that we really have to do is speak out, to let others know that they are not alone, and then to help them straighten out their thoughts. We need to show them just a little bit of courage, to let them know that they too can speak out without being punished for it. We need more people to write forceful but intelligent letters to their local newspapers, more people to bring their friends and neighbors and colleagues into their living rooms to listen to one of these broadcasts. And gradually, the understanding will dawn in the minds of that portion of our people which is still healthy, that portion which still is uncorrupted, that we are stronger than all of our enemies. And then the storm, the great cleansing storm, will break loose. Thanks for being with me again today.